matter of truth, and to help you decide halakha l'masa, as opposed to lumbus, it matters what everybody holds, because you, right, you might want to decide that after shittos. Right, so as opposed to a lumbus shir, you might just do the rishonim that add conceptual points. In halakha shir, you have to at least, right, you have to give people a sense of how many people hold what. So, right, so we'll put all of rishonim that something that it's fine to say, all of the Torah, but I'll bracket those that I don't, at least for my first time through, I didn't see them as having a significant thing to add. Okay, so the exercise I want to start off with today, right, this is an exercise that's going to be important to all the Rishonim, is to make sure that we can plug the Rishonim back into the Gemara. Right, not just that we can take the Rishonim and say, what does the Rishon say abstractly, but make sure that we understand how the Rishon reads the Gemara, and not only the Gemara the Rishon is commenting on, but also how the Rishon understands all the other sources, either the ones they mentioned explicitly, or the ones that we can plausibly think they really certainly knew, and even thought about. Right? For example, every Rishon on Baba Basra knows about the sugya in Arachis. Okay, so you can't pretend that there's no that Rishon is unaware of the position that let baby Shum Lishna Gisha is based on the principle of Chabrat the Chabrat Yisrael, and I don't know of any manuscript that leaves that line out in Arachin either. And I'm not aware of any manuscript that puts it in on the Basra, and I'm not aware of any manuscript that takes it out in Arachin. So you have to assume that every Rishon begins with an awareness that that there are two Sugyot, one of which mentions it, one of which doesn't. And right, and figure out how they account for that. And now the way I'm structuring the shir, you haven't seen the whole sugya in Arachin, and that's on purpose. So we're going to read through all the Rishonim, and then we may have to reevaluate when we actually see the sugya in Arachin and see if the readings we had of those Rishonim are still plausible in light of the full context of the sugya in Arachin. But I want to, on the same principle in direction, so the sugya in Arachin is actually a much harder sugya. So I want you to approach that last. Right, having seen everybody read that line out of the specific Lashon Hara context, and that's right, as opposed to having one tradition and closing down all the others to give. Now the other thing to be aware of methodologically is that Rashi, Rashbam, commentaries like that have an obligation to be comprehensive. Right, that means that they have to tell you how they read every line of Gemara, and if you don't read, and if most of the time if you can't figure out how they read a line, it means that they thought it was obvious and you should have been able to figure it out. But they have a position, and they want you to have a position. Whereas a commentary like Tosfos doesn't have an obligation to be comprehensive, and Tosfos just has to tell you what he sees as the things that are where he has a compelling chiddush. And therefore, it's perfectly reasonable, or Joseph can say, well, you know what, I assumed you knew Rashi. And similarly, right, the Rishbam might say, I assume you know the Rashbam, the Rashbam might say, I assume you know the Ramban. It's issues like that. Therefore, when you finish reading Rashi on a sugya, usually, right, you should be able to say how Rashi reads every line in the sugya. You may not know Rashi's contextual commitment, but you should know his textual commitment. Whereas you can read a Tosfot and end up saying, you know what? What I know is how Tosfot reads this. But you could read everything right, but on the other issue, how he reads every other one, he could read it like anybody else. Okay, right? So when we talk about how did Tosfot read Gemara, it's entirely legitimate to say, I don't know how Tosfot read this line of Gemara because he could read it in any of the following six ways. Right, so you have to figure out where there are commitments and where there are not commitments. And then if you're in a conceptual analysis, you have to say, well, he said this, and so you have the option of saying either this, about there. Right, so that means that he can mean many different things. Right, just be careful, right, careful to know where he's making commitments, where he's not making commitments. Okay, so what I'm interested in is, right, I'm going to start structurally, right, so we don't have to actually read through the Gemara each time. There are, right, the Gemara offers three different understandings of the Machlokes as to how many people you need to Machah. Right? The first understanding is that the Machlokes depends on whether or not you agree with Rabbi Baruch Mina. Okay, so to understand the Gemara, right, if you comprehensively understand someone's position, you know how they explain Rabbi Baruch Mina,
that's the person, right? How they explain its relevance to the issue of makalah. And you know, right, what it means to disagree with Allah Baruch Hu. Okay, right, you should understand, right, to comprehend, you understand both mandalas, you understand the person who requires three, you understand how he connects that to Lashon Hara, right, and the person who disagrees with Allah Baruch Hu about Lashon Hara, you have to know, right, what is that position? And I gave you the two easy options. Does that mean that he's machmir and he thinks that it's also even in front of three people? Or they didn't make you anything, that is mutter in front of two people. Right, those are one of two easy options. Okay, so the second position says that no, both of them agree with, both of them agree with Rabbi Baruch Hu, and the machloket is about whether a machloka has to be defined or not. And if you look carefully at the Rishonim, we're going to see that it's not. Not all Rishonim has the same gift as to which position holds which. Right, so we know, right, so we know there is a machlokit, and one of the, where the mandamar who hold, one of the mandamar, two or three holds the panah, and one of them holds shalom the panah, but all of them function in a universe where they agree with Rabbi Baruch Hu, but they all agree with Rabbi Baruch Hu, it doesn't mean they all think that Rabbi Baruch Hu is relevant. Right, the person who thinks three may or may not think that Rav Baruch Hu is directly relevant. The person who thinks two probably thinks that Rav Baruch Hu is not relevant. Okay, then there's a third position. The third says that everybody agrees that Mecha Shlo B'Fanav is Mecha. It does not say explicitly whether everybody still agrees with Rav Baruch Hu or not. It could either be that everybody still agrees with Rav Baruch Hu. It could also be that everyone disagrees with Rav Baruch Hu. It could be that everyone agrees that Rav Baruch Hu is relevant. Right, all we know is that all we know is that in this position, the machloket about two or three is not dependent on whether or not you agree with Rav Baruch Hu. Yes, sir.
Depending
on number two,
information.
Right.
We don't need to know that both between three, both my daughters, was agree that
our higher food is correct.
We don't necessarily
know that
three.
No,
we don't necessarily know that three. You don't know that two? No, I do. Why should we assume that the Gemara establishes that as, like, because of the Kurama, as everyone believes there, our higher food, that's a sort of trend that we're following the Gemara?
Could be. Yeah, right, you could do a study. You can do a study of Yibayis Neymas in the Gemara and see if it's always the case that all subsequent Yibayis Neymas agree with the previous one. Most Rishonim assume that. I don't think it's universal. Okay, I think it's the open, right? Read the text to the possibility. And even if they all agree, right, they might all agree that it's irrelevant anyway. Which means that their agreement is insignificant. And saying they all agree and saying that it doesn't matter what they say is structurally equivalent to the Gemara. Okay, as long as you don't think the issue depends on that anymore. Again, fundamentally, not to me, whether the person who says three is saying that because of Rabbi Baruch Hu in the third position or not. Okay, so those are a basic structural overview of the Gemara.
Sorry, can you just repeat
this first? Here's one of the depends, right? If you say three, you hold. If you say two, you don't. Right? So the issue depends on Rabbi Baruch Hu. The second one says it doesn't. It depends on something else, but everyone agrees with him. And the third one says it depends on something else, and maybe everyone agrees with him or not. I don't know. Or at least what I say is that in the second position. You can assume that if you don't agree with Rabbi Baruch Hu, right, then at least one position becomes untenable. Right, at least one and probably both positions have to agree with Rabbi Baruch Hu. Probably one. And the third, they don't know anything about it. Right? It's not really, it just may not be, it may be utterly independent. Okay. Now we're going to make a methodological assumption that all three,
that before the Ramatsu of Tosco and the Vasha Lamatana all that we're discussing are consistent with one another. I think that's usually a plausible methodological assumption, even though you have two different Ramatsu on the same line, apparently. Like the initial Mishnah Bisha, it seems to me easier parsimonious to assume that we are dealing with a consistent position, and therefore we can treat the Tosco as a whole. It's a one long analysis of the figure. If I were desperate, I might not say that, but okay. So we have in Tosfos is Tosfos himself. We can bracket the third one because the third one just tells you what his gift is. It doesn't solve the problem, so it doesn't tell us that much. We have Tosfos perish on the figure as such. Really reads the following. West from the Shemush Nebisha, the Osa Shomer Vishmei Gimel, the Kabbalah Yisrael Vistel Peshiyeda. That's really what we put right. That's really put together as early commentary. The second Tosfos really comes before the first. Right, so Tosfos is committed in the, right, Tosfos is committed to saying that Rav Barda Huda, in the first language, according to the people who agree and disagree with him, okay, so in the first lashon, so the machlokes, right? So the position of Rav Baruch Huna is that saying something which would otherwise be lashon hara in front of three people is mutter, because saying it in front of three people generates the kol, and the subject of your lashon hara will find out. Okay, that's the statement of Rav Baruch Huna, which the person who says three agrees with, and the person who says two disagrees with. Okay, that's all we know about the first Lashon. Right, the rest of the Tosfos deals with all the Lashonot. That's right, all we know in the first Lashon, based on Tosfos' direct commentary, is right, is that line, right, that when it says, right, when it says that Dilma the Rav Baruch Huna can mitzvah, right, that Mandamar Gimel Yisra the Rav Baruch Huna, Mandamar that less of the Rav Baruch Huna, but the statement of Rav Baruch Huna is that saying at least one thing, which would otherwise be Lashon Hara, in front of three people, makes it not Lashon Hara because it generates the kol. And therefore, the subject of Lashon Hara will eventually know about this. Now, Tosfos tells you in one place that he is doing this because of pressure from another sugya, and in the second place, he says he's giving his child despite pressure from another sugya. Okay, where does Tosfos tell you that when you felt the pressure from another sugya? Yes. In the second one. All right, what does he say, Avishai? What's his pressure?
In spite of the
pressure that's forcing you to say this, right?
Because of what the arrogance,
they have to... It's the one that says arrogance, okay? Right, because there are some of the steps in Arachian. Okay, so it says the sugya in Arachian, as he reports it, right, generates one aspect of his commentary. Which aspect of his commentary? What is the option that he had, which is precluded by the sugya in Arachian? Okay, yes, okay. What does he say? What does he say? Precluded, meaning that there's something he wouldn't have said if it weren't for Arachin, and Arachin means he can't say it anymore, he has to say this. So what does he have to say, and what can't he say?
He has to say the information
is
automatically
going to
be public.
He has to say the information is automatically going to be public. Okay. In terms of the language, right, what is read? What do you think that?
Yeah, I'm going to walk through. It's important, but I think it's not true. But it's important just to recognize why. Right? Because the reason you think that, yes, I'm under shows by day, is because you think that the best thing you could prove from the statement of Rabbi Yossi, since Rabbi Yossi said, look, Kazaki Lachorai, so it sounds like the important thing about Rabbi Yossi is that it gets better as the apprentice of another person, so something should learn from Rabbi Yossi and the point that it gets back to the person. Right, and that absolutely can follow logically, except that then you should quote it in the first post, but not the second. Because his rationale, right, there are two elements of the rest. The first post would give you the rationale for a reversal. Yeah. The second post would give you the context. Okay? And so it quotes the Sugya Arachim to give you the content, right, to give you the content and not the rationale. Right, you see? Okay. Right, so I'm suggesting, right, let me show you what they're telling you, right, what is Tosa think you could for Genesee prove?
It's on for things, right? You can't say that it's on permission to repeat it, that it has to be on one thing.
Because Rabbi Yossi is irrelevant. Right, and so that the fact that it's not that Rabbi Yossi's statement is true, right? Since the Gemara cites Rabbi Yossi as evidence for Rama Bar Akuna, and Rabbi Yossi is clearly right, is clearly talking about the speaker, the original speaker, and not a repeater. I guess I never said anything. That's not the original speaker. Therefore, Rama Bar Akuna must also be talking about the original speaker, right? Meaning that Tosfos knows full well that just based on Rav Arachuna's statement here, I might think it meant somebody other than the original speaker, but the fact that the Gemara Arachin, as he reports it, we haven't seen that, the fact that the Gemara Arachin, as he reports it, claims that Rabbi Yossi's statement is a support, or corresponds to it. Rav Arachuna's statement demonstrates that Rav Arachuna must be talking about the original speaker. Okay, having said that we're talking about the original speaker, Joseph is now confronted by the question, well, why should it be okay for the original speaker to do something and right, to do something in front of three people? Now, he still has to still get on roughly the back of his head now. Right? So he's also doing what we have to mention this explicitly to say that it has something to do with Lokas Arzilas, all right? Right? On the other hand, right, so therefore, it seems plausible to him to suggest that the rationale for saying that it's mutter for this person, mutter for this person, is that it is tantamount, right? Saying it's under three people is the same thing as saying, I'm not worried that I'll have to back off if the person finds out. And then the only question he's left with is, how is saying in front of three people the same? And the answer is because saying in front of three people means that the other person, well, I have to figure out how much does it mean the other person will find out, or it means that...
Or you don't care to find out.
Okay, so there is tension, right? So some languages he will find out, but also some rationale requires is the possibility. And what Rabbi Yossi says is, I never had to turn around. Right? It's not that I only spoke. Rabbi Yossi doesn't say I only spoke in front of the person. Yeah, so I always spoke as if it didn't, right, as if it didn't matter when the person was there. Right? So also some rationale requires is, right, is that is that the call happens? Is that the call happens? Is that the call creates? Is that the call creates the possibility that the other person can find out? And that's all he needs. And we also find out. Tosfos says Kala Yisli. Now, what could Tosfos say instead of the Kala Yisli? Now that leads to two possibilities. Either Tosfos translates Chavra Chavra Yisli as there will be a goal, or else Tosfos doesn't think that Chavra Chavra is the correct explanation of this figure here, and so he's giving you an alternative. Okay, so not clear which of those, right, which of those tests is doing. Okay, he doesn't depend on the language of Chavra Chavra, he generates his new Svara. It just may be that the Svara he generates, the Kol, right, tells you what his understanding of Chavra Chavra is. Yeah.
And Kol is But it comes, like, isn't telling you what the mechanism is for becoming known. That would be a proper thought.
Yeah.
The college clinic is just what happens. And he uses that model because he's interested in answering the question, well, why does this have a hole and that doesn't have a hole? And he's quoting the lesson from the Abbas Valtez, the middle of Valtez, so yeah, on purpose, because he wants to discuss the distinction and when things get spread around the world.
Okay, that's possible too. Good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not so sure, but, you know, later on he sees that he needs one person as a Chavra. He needs to actually say why three people is different. There's some quality of difference between, you know, a Chavra and three people, whereas, you know, there's no...
Okay, right, so maybe that he, right, it may be that he's, right, that he's already foreshadowing what he's going to say in a later position. That's possible too.
Or maybe he thinks he holds that one is enough. He has to come up with something other to explain why it's three and not just one.
Absolutely. Right, that's what I'm pointing out. Chala may not be a definition of Chavrus. It may be, maybe the Chala is something that happens in addition to Chavrus to Chavrus, and he thinks that that's necessary here. In which case, he has an agreement to figure again. The circuit the way we have it in our office. Yeah.
Oh.
Right, yeah. Right, that's right. That's right. One of the issues that we don't have here, right, we don't know, and it's important to understand, we don't know the extent to, right, we don't know whether Tosfot has the line in our office to cover this way. Right, we do know that he has Rabbi Yossi associated with this line. We don't know the answer to the Chavrus, so it could be that Tosfos is looking at a completely different Talmudic map than we are. Okay? So I will tell you that in our Sugya and Arachin, Rabbi Yossi is not transit. The Chavrus. Okay, so be very careful what Tosfos is going to do and he's not. Okay. So now, based on this information, according to Tosfos, at this stage, what is the connection? Right? Why does the person who requires three from Makkah has to agree with Rabbi, has to agree with Rabbi Kedar al-Garzana.
Because he's
going to say, right, this doesn't explain at this point the position that says if you hold you need three from Makkah, then you must agree with Rabbi Barakuna, and if you hold two from Makkah, then you must disagree with Rabbi Barakuna. And that's what he says, you know, right?
Yeah, thank you. Not that you must, but that he does. This is one possible thing they need to be arguing.
Right, so isn't it right? So isn't right? The issue depends on that, right?
According to Tosfos, the reason they must is because the Gemara says so.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm trying to explain, right? What's the connection? Right? Why would we say that if you hold like Rabbi Baruch Huna, then obviously you're going to hold the Tar requires three, and if you hold two, then obviously you must disagree with Rabbi Baruch Huna. Right? That's right. What's the connection? Okay, yes, sir.
Because it depends on whether or not there's a call.
Okay, so the easy, so the way we do it in Tosfos is that Makkah must require a call. Rabbi Baruch Huna believes that three people and not fewer is what generates a call, and therefore, right, he requires three. Whereas the person who disagrees with Rabbi Baruch Huna must also agree that Makkah requires a call.
And that you should just get a call
from two. Right, but he must disagree with Rabbi Baruch Huna and say that you can get a call even from two people, which Lekhara would mean that he also believes that Lashon Hara is also much better in front of two people. Okay? Now, I can qualify Rabbi by saying I don't actually know that Makkah depends on call. It could just be it depends on Tosfos Shiyeda. Right? It could just be the logic it says is right. But I think it's right. I think it's probably correct to say that to make this connection, you have to say that Lashon Hara depends on the coal and right on the coal which generates knowledge. Nasa must also require at least the coal. Maybe the purpose is for the call itself, maybe so the person will also know, right? And the other person, right, and the person says too, thinks that you can get the same call in the, right, in the same, right, in the, doing two. Yes, sir.
Are you asserting that the advice of you and my father would require a full or a bit in the fashion of a punishment.
I don't know.
Is there a
possibility
that even the
father's father could be? Again, that's the point of the thing I'm making it wrong, right? Is it that we agree that we need a coal because the coal generates that? You could make it depend on Rav Arasuna just because Rav Arasuna requires a coal. And the fact that the Lashon Hara, Rav Arasuna requires the coal to generate something else is relevant to Matar. Okay? So the first vision that goes with is that Makah somehow requires the same kind of coal that Lashon Hara does. Okay. And background says that Makah is obtained with Lashon Hara because people know whom they're supposed to eventually get the information to, and it's not like loans, because nobody feels a need to keep secret about Makot. Okay, that's not that, right? We've gotten rid of that kid. Lashon Hara and Makot are things that people spread, and loans are sui generis according to Tosfos, the one thing that people don't talk about to the person. Or, if you don't agree with that, it's because, right, somehow, right, this is important, somehow the coal is only generated when you know who the person is you're supposed to tell it to. Or the coal only generates sofo shiyeda when you know who the person is you're supposed to tell it to. And that can have implications for things like broad Lashon Hara about large groups of people, or Lashon Hara about unnamed sources. Things like that.
Yeah.
Because it might be that doesn't get back to the person you're talking about either, because people don't know. Right, yeah.
Just going back to the first episode by Don, you're reading the vow as you need both, or that you need either or. And what you just said implies that you need either or, that just the fact that you wouldn't know who you're supposed to talk about, right, or is there, or who it has to get back to,
yeah,
would be enough. I mean, dealing with those means both of those, and both of those factors are needed in order to ensure that something won't get out.
Oh, you think that would mean both?
So I wasn't sure. It could either be
an if, or it could be. My instinct is that Tosfos is giving an alternate teres. It always means an alternative, not a right, not a default. That would be my sense of Tosfos. He's not committed to either one. He's not committed to which one of them, but either one of them could be sufficient. Okay. But again, you know, Tosfos is interested in mechanically demonstrating that you can make the connection. He's not interested in which of these distinctions is true. Okay. So that's my teretz number one, according to Joseph. Version number two of the Gemara is that everybody agrees with Rav Barakuna. The issue is whether a makar of the Tanav is or is not a makar. Did I supposed to tell you anything about this language? This one? Not a word. Okay, we just have to sort of skip that. Because we really have no idea. Again, assuming that the two Dibre Maskel are both talking about the first Lashon, which I'm assuming for now. So then there's absolutely no idea what Tosfos says about the second Lashon. You have to be sure.
Well,
It's probable that Tosfos thinks that Rav Arasuna has to mean the same thing. And so everyone now agrees that it is mutter for the person. In the second language, everyone agrees that the person, that if a person says something that would otherwise be lashon hara, or there are some things which would otherwise be lashon hara, that if a person says it in front of three people, it's mutter, because it generates a call, and the person will eventually find out.
How that relates to matar, I don't know.
We could need to do a fancy version of the claim. Well, so one person says that Nachal requires the final one person. Right, but again, since there are even alternatives yourselves as to which position lines up which way, and we don't know which one Tosfot has, right, so it has to say we don't know. Right, it's very important not to impose more weight on the Shana than they can bear. Right, so Tosfot says nothing whatsoever about the second Tosfot. So all we know is not just going to end tomorrow. Anybody saying this can drop out easily. Okay. Although I'm not aware of one which you dropped out. Okay. Third says that the closest between 2 and 3 is assuming that everybody does something that Gears does not want, because he said my number say base because every massage will be kind of walking the class. So at least you can, right. So that's probably that much we could do. But I don't know if there's any individual understanding of how that connection is made. The third position says that one person, that the machlokes is whether you need tahadusa, or whether you need gilui milsa. And that just makes a whole bunch of strong statements. He says the person who requires two requires only edus, and he says, but actually, but he has to recognize that he doesn't only require edus. He requires edus plus what? Here's the result he needs. Tosfot says that in the end, everybody agrees the Mechashlo the fun of work, but they also all agree that Mechashlo the fun of requires Tosfot Shieda. And the person, at this stage, Tosfot seems to say that everyone agrees, this is a huge book, so that everyone agrees that some form of Tosfot Shieda, namely, the kind of Tosfot Shieda that is accomplished by Chavra to Chavra, really only requires one. Right, the Tosfot says the last Lashon is built, right, the last figure is built on the claim that everyone requires something more than Chavra to Chavra. Okay, right, that's the right way to read. Mm-hmm. Right, because Rav Baruch Huna is and nobody requires more than Rav Baruch Huna. It's not all included in the claim that everyone requires more than Chavra of the Chavra, as you're telling the Plagueis. But that's what says that. He said, right, and apparently everyone should agree that Chavra of the Chavra requires only one. But the only issue is how much we require beyond what Chavra the Chavra can accomplish for us. Is there any question? Or is it supposed to be your question? Yeah.
The fact that he says that if it weren't for Sadusa, we could have just one because one accomplishes Chavra the Chavra.
We need to mention that. If we don't need something that Chavra the Chavra accomplishes. I'm assuming that Chavra the Chavra accomplishes Tosfot Shieda, you're right. It might be that Chavra the Chavra just brings accomplishes coal. And that's all we need. Alright, at this point, he's parsimonious since he said Tosfot Shieda in the first one, I'm assuming it in the last one as well. But you're right, I can't prove that.
I'm assuming that, yeah.
So again, right, all I know is that there's something, I should really be more parsimonious, but I should say, all we know is that Tosfot claims that everyone agrees they need something more than what Chavra the Chavra accomplishes, because whatever Chavra the Chavra accomplishes can be accomplished by one person. Okay, that's a huge interpretational fish. And it's really interesting to ask what compels Tosfot to make that claim? Why didn't he just say everyone agrees that two people generate Chavra? Right, two people generate whatever the Chavis does, and, right, they were, yeah.
Why is it that the Gemara introduces this new idea of Sanjusa then?
Why does he go into the whole idea of sadhusa? Okay, good. Right, very good. Right? It may be that Tosfot is saying that the language of sadhusa, right, compels me to believe that there's something, that there's something beyond it. It's still looking at to say that we need two people because, in addition to covering the chavar, we need something else. Right? There's still nothing forcing Tosfot to believe that one person accomplishes covers the chavar. Yes. Okay, so the curious substance is just driven by the simple language. It doesn't just say, by the way, I had no need to mention this to you beforehand, but now I feel compelled to tell you that Karvas Pasama can be accomplished by one. The only issue is that Karvas Pasama doesn't mention anywhere in the Sugya. So why did he feel compelled to tell me this? And why didn't he feel compelled to tell me in the first line? That's when he should have said it.
Well, I mean, yeah. He has to distinguish between this, especially if he doesn't have the second
Mishnah
as well, if you don't know, but the...
It clearly does. He has that Mishnah, right? So probably,
right,
yeah.
So if, either way, he has to distinguish between the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah.
Yeah.
Right? So, the problem is, if all Sadhuta means,
yeah,
is that... The first question is them disagreeing about whether or not whether two people is sufficient to get it out.
Right.
Right. So, if that's all this is about also.
Yeah.
Right. Then they're the same.
Good. I could say the third line is right. The first line is about whether two people is sufficient to get it out, and the third one is about whether getting it out is enough.
Right. But you still need to say.
Yes.
He needs to make a decision.
It doesn't need to make this decision. He could have said the agreement of two people is right, getting out is enough, and then he chooses to say, you know what, one person getting out is enough, and no one thinks that, right, which is a finish. Okay, maybe, right, you know, the easiest reading for me is Deborah's reading, and that he just sees this as an opportunity to mention that the Gemara makes sense, that the Gemara means what it says, when it says, Chavra the Chavra, and they do that. But then, if you say that, you figure out, you know, whether how everybody else feels about it. Right? It's so I ask you to think of Archimedean points for Tosfot. The Archimedean points for Tosfot are that there's a connection between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar bar Yochanan, and that forces him to believe that it has to be the original speaker. And possibly a second point, Archimedean point for Tosfot, is that it says Chavra to Chavra, and that means that one person can generate that. Right? And it's framing a commentary around those two. And around those two points. That would mean it's right? Chavra the Chavra means your friend is a friend, not your friend is a friend. So therefore, Tosfot may just believe that there's no way to read the Sugya which requires more than one person to create that, right, to create what Chavra the Chavra does. And that's just a given for him. So any time we require more than one person, that must mean that we're requiring something beyond Chavra the Chavra. Okay, then right, that would, of course, you know, put us in trouble with the Gemara Rafi, which seems to think that Rabba Barthon is required of the three, is built on top of the Papa. Right, but we have to recognize that Tosfot's reading here, right, is either explicitly against, or does not have the Gemara Rafi saying that way, or else must have a really interesting reading of the Gemara Rafi. So what forces him to reread the Gemara Rafi that way? Maybe just the language. Okay. The Tosfot says that the third shot is everybody agrees that Chavra the Chavra can be accomplished by one person. The person who requires two requires Edus. And the person who requires three requires Gili Milsa. Okay, so the focus is, it seems right now, that in addition to Chavra the Chavra, what else do we require for Lashon Hara? But in order, before we commit ourselves to that, let's write, how do you read the second line of the Yachapish Lashon Hara in Yishma? What does it accomplish? And what's the difference there? Yes, what?
It deals with the problem of assuming that that we're building it out. Even if you tell three people, if three people think that something's Lashon Hara, then they're not going to spread it anyway.
So,
and then you might accomplish
Gili Milsa. Follow logic, right? I'm just trying to follow it. Okay, it says
We eight him. If there weren't eight him, it would be one person. One would be enough because one person in the council is covered the chavra. And even though Lashon Hara is not nishma, and therefore what should happen?
Therefore, it should start after the first person here.
Do it. And therefore what?
And therefore, it'll never accomplish what she did not. It'll never get back to the person.
So this is part of his analysis of chavra to chavra. In terms of chavra to chavra, we only require one. So it is a very simple answer. So even the right, here we require, if we didn't require even if one would be enough, except one isn't enough to Lashon Hara because one person doesn't spread any two people. So he doesn't say that. Right? So that's not where he goes. Right? He says, right, he assumes that we require Aegis for reasons other than spreading.
Right.
Right? So I don't think that works yet. Okay, yes, Jonathan, what do you want to say?
Well, if you assume that Chavra would be Matya Lashon Hara,
yeah,
and you all just fundamentally do the same thing over to one person, we'll cause the mechanism of positive Hara. And you understand that also the hint that we're talking about is not, is essentially when you hold like Joseph, the Matir is saying, oh, Lashon Hara, the Matir is for the person who's speaking.
Yeah.
And therefore, what would come out is that if you hold the Chavra applies even when you say to one person, and any time there's Chavra, this movement say Lashon Hara, it would always be Lashon Hara, because whenever you would say it to anyone, the word would get out, therefore the show would get out, therefore you have to explain that while in general Chavra the Chavra may work, even when you're talking to one person, due to the nature of Lashon Hara that people will hide it, when it's said only to them, I need more people to create Chavra the Chavra and Matir saying Lashon Hara to them than I would had it not been.
Okay, good. Let's play that and make it standing up for a second. I think he's arguing the problem. This Lashon believes that everybody agrees with Rav Baruch. Okay, that's his first stance. This Lashon believes everyone agrees with Rav Baruch. That means that everyone agrees that by Lashon Hara, you need three people to create the Kavra the Kavra. But everyone also agrees that right, all the way through the Soya, that for Makah to work, you have to create Sofa Shiyida. So the issue now is, how, right, if everyone agrees that by Lashon Hara it requires three people to get to Sofa Shiyida, and everyone agrees that Makah requires Sofa Shiyida, how is it that by Makah, we can have somebody who requires only two? Okay, so the second third says the reason you do this is because you require, right, if you require only two because you require the common cause. So the two people obviously is necessary. It's no Shiyida, it's not Sofa. But in the third language, right, the question is, if we agree that Makah, that the thing which creates the Chalos Makah, so to speak, and the thing which creates the Heter, Lashon Hara, is the same, how can we require different numbers of people? So the first thing he says is that you should know that Lashon Hara, requires something beyond the normal cover of the cover. Okay? And everyone agrees about that. Everyone agrees about that. That the Hedrick Lashon Hara does not work through the normal mechanism of Sofa Shiyida. Now the person who holds two says that everywhere but Lashon Hara, Sofa Shiyida is created by one person. And here, right, and here, we, right, so here one person would be enough for that. So by the way, from a kind of work, he is. And that's the first position. Now everyone knows that Chavra the Chavra creates, so if one person creates Sofa Shiyida because of Chavra the Chavra, Lashon Hara is a special case because people don't talk. And therefore we can end up with two. So now the challenge is, what about the person who says three? Now the person who says three has two options. He can either say, I think that people also hide makos just like they hide Lashon Hara. Or he can say that by makos, we need something more than Sofa Shiyida.
Okay, do you get the distinction?
Yeah.
Okay. So one way of understanding the third position is to say that the that in order to create the push yida by lashon hara, you need to create something more than chavra v'chavra. You have to create a gilui milta, right, which is probably the same thing as a kol. Yes.
No,
category two is two of ages. Right, that's formal. That has nothing to do with knowledge. Right, but there are two. There's sofa shi'eda, which is the result, and sofa shi'eda can be accomplished by a singular chain, chavra v'chavra, or it can be accomplished by a general diffusion, which we call a kol or a gilui milta, which requires three. Right, so now the question is, do we say that, now by lashon hara, the only reason we require general diffusion, at least as far as we know, is so that we get the sofa shi'eda. When we require three by machal, it might be because we think that machal, like lashon hara, will only get back to the person through general diffusion. Or it could be that I think that machal, unlike lashon hara, in addition to sofa shi'eda, requires general diffusion. Or most radically, I could say, guess what, in this, the person who holds three believes that sofa shi'eda is not enough to mach lashon hara. And the head of lashon hara, unlike the first lashon, the head of lashon hara is not sofa shi'eda at all. The head of lashon hara is general diffusion. Okay, yes, Michael.
So, the conditional force 3 holds that by lashon hara you need gilui milta.
Yes.
Which is more than chavra v'chavra.
Yes.
And so what Rabbi Bar Akuna says that you need 3 from chavra v'chavra, that position can't hold like
Rabbi Bar Akuna? Well, hold on, one or two things. Either it means that position doesn't believe that that's the rationale for Rabbi Bar Akuna, or it thinks that because Lashon Hara people hide things, therefore Chavra V'Chavra won't happen by Lashon Hara unless you have three people. Because people are constrained to tell their friends otherwise. We don't know which. Yes. Okay. So the bottom line is we know very little about Tosfos' position. The bottom line is we know that Tosfos believes that Rabbi Bar Akuna is talking about the original speaker, and we know why he thinks that. So anybody else who thinks something else, we have to say, well, what do they do with Rabbi Yosef? Okay, but there may be a very simple answer to that, which is they didn't have it. Right, so maybe that's the Archimedean point of Tosfos' position is simply a girsa. Right, that's right. We know that Tosfos believes that if you think that, then the grounds for the head, or also based on Rabbi Yosef, Tosfos is also driven to say that the grounds of the head there is Tosfos Yehuda, at least in the first position. Beyond that, it seems that Tosfos has interesting positions about Machal. Machal, according to everybody, requires at least Tosfos Yehuda. And that seems to be a commitment of Tosfos. But in terms of Lashon Hara, we don't know, right? In terms of Lashon Hara, there's a possibility at the end that he requires, in addition to Tosfos Yehuda, that he requires something called Gilui Milta, and that's also part of the Hefer. But most likely not. Okay. Yes, sir.
In the third,
what's
the requirement
that after Lashon Hara? Three. So Lashon Hara has the same requirement after Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara requires Gilui Milta possibly only because at least the Sofa Shi'eda, possibly because it requires more than Sofa Shi'eda. Possibly because he doesn't require Sofa Shi'eda at all, but that's the least likely because Sofa hasn't changed that position.
So
And for Gilad and Gilad Milsa, it's still three. But he doesn't see any reason that Lachash should require Gilad Milsa.
Rather, we can't say that
he holds the ground over him and the other person doesn't. Right? The Kemakolkis can't depend on that.
We can't say the
fact that
we say that
the
Mahogany
is 2 and the Mahogany is 3. Because then we have to say the Mahogany is that. And that goes back to the first question of the Mahogany is that. The third question has to assume the only issue that matters is whether you, right, is whether you require Sadhus or Gilad Milsa. And then you want to frame this that way. Right, so linguistically, it's very difficult to claim it. So you went back to the previous position.
You just go along with the third point.
It's irrelevant, so then just bracket it, right? It doesn't affect your position. You could say that the person will two also thinks that Gilad Milsa was accomplished by two. You can't disprove that, there's just no reason to say. Right? If he does so, it's hard to imagine he would say that since he doesn't go out of his way to do that. Okay, what emerges from this though is that the mechanism of Chavos the Chavos ordinarily works by one. So in order, if you want to claim that the Hetzes Lashon Hara is Sofo Sheyida, then you have to claim, as he does, that Lashon Hara Asaha spreads more slowly than most other information, even to the subject. Okay, and that's not necessarily, that's a strong descriptive position sociologically, which you have to think about whether you find compelling, whether the other is trying to move. Does Lashon Hara spread less rapidly than other information to people, or does it spread more rapidly? Okay, that's good. And now you move on to the shulchan. Okay, so I bracketed the first part, which is largely a compilation of the various hyperbolic statements that you can decide to read like the Rishon Lezion. Okay, and that gets us to the Lomi Baya. Okay, let's see, Mac, you want to read?
The Lomi Baya notes that it's Malaysia, that's where I learned from my mom, and not only are the things that are not things, forbidden for a person to say because they're lying.
Okay, so lying about somebody else is kind of facial usher just because it's a lie. Right, it's a prohibition against slander or libel of some sort. Okay, he doesn't mention whether those lies have to be damaging or whether it's simply usher to misrepresent people. Right, so if I walk around and I say, do you know Michael Prashan as one? That would be usher. Right, he doesn't say whether it's usher or dafka to say things about, or lies about people, or whether this is just part of the general instead of lying. If there is a general issue of lying. And the Chamali book is very fond of pointing out there is a pasuk with the chakra. One of her routines about you should assume we knew 18 reasons that it was most certainly after the Kish Rachel. So didn't know there was a pasuk with the chakra. But the pasuk with the chakra, of course, obviously doesn't mean that. It stood to a much more constrained context. So let's assume that, so we all know the Shulchan claims that things that are false, at least things that are false about other people that are damaging to them are usher per se because they are false, and we move from there, go on. Okay. Are we talking about things about other people or just things in general? What's the contrast between truth and falsehood? What I want is an A and a B, in which the only difference between A and B is that A is true and B is false. Can you do that for me? No, here. But I want a statement, the same statement he says, well, A is usher because it's checker, and B, the same statement, but it happens not to be true, right, is not usher for the same reason. So what's the statement when it's said by whom, that he thinks is obviously after when it's false, and requires demonstration that it's after when it's true. He's a thief. So he's a thief is after when it's false. So he's a thief. Who are you, the speaker? Who is Peter? A is speaking. Who is the thief? B? B is a thief. B is a thief. And who is A speaking to? Okay, so if A says to C, B is a thief, and B is not a thief, that's obviously false. But if A says to C, B is a thief, and B is a thief, that's our issue. But that's not what he says, is it? Right, what does he say? He says if A says to C, B is a thief, and don't tell B.
No.
B is a thief.
Don't tell
A.
Yeah. And
then
A wants to repeat it to
B. Can you say that again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Never say it again.
B said to A, I'm a thief first. I sold this
letter,
so don't tell him.
B said to A.
Now he wants to say to C, he is a thief. But he can't, because
it's a secret. You think that B told A about himself, I am a thief, and it's true. A still can't repeat it. If you want the original statement. So the claim is that there's still any parallel. It has to be if B tells A a thief and he's not, then of course A can't tell C.
Well, don't you receive me? If I tell you that I have four children, but don't tell anybody. Or I tell you that I have six children, but don't tell anybody.
No, so you're claiming the flow.
My secret.
You're saying the flow goes like this, okay? If A tells B that A has four children,
mm-hmm.
and A, in fact, only has three children, then B could not tell that to C. Because it would be repeating the falsehood.
Well, why...
Jesse, what do you want to claim, yeah?
I just think it sounds like you're neither allowed to tell lies, nor are you allowed to repeat anything anyone tells you.
Okay.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to. You have to get explicit permission. So, like, anything anyone tells you without explicit permission, I can't repeat.
Okay. So Jesse wants to break the power with it.
Yeah.
But I'm wrong, right? It's not that the same statement is right. The same statement cannot be said as false. And right, but there's an issue if it's true. You know, yes, but false statements cannot be said under any circumstances. And true statements, which can be said under circumstances, nonetheless cannot be repeated without permission.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. That's right. So, when we buy a milk, we'll try that. When we buy a milk to the left today, that's what we're saying, right? Obviously, things that are false, people are not allowed to say to anybody, because they're lies. And a lot of people milk to these things, even things that are true, which you're allowed to say in your own name to anybody. Now, you can make true statements. Right, you can make true statements of your own knowledge to anybody, and why shouldn't you be able to make true statements? But if a true statement you're going to make is based on information provided by somebody else, who told you not to tell it?
Right?
We didn't give you permission to say it, right? Okay, very good. Very good. And it's not clear that the information, what you're repeating is not necessarily that he told it to you. If the information as such, right, so-and-so told me that, right, so, right, A tells B that C and D are divorcing, right, B can't tell that to E, not only can't say A told me, but he can't say, I know that C and D are divorcing. Right, yes?
Absolutely.
That's the point I'm trying to make. My main precise is that at this point, right, the only issue, right, there's an issue of falsehood and there's an issue of breach of secrecy. Right, or right, this right, there's a confidentiality. Presumed confidentiality issue. No, because I can know that myself.
Only you do know that.
Right.
If I was...
What if I'm in Florida and you're in Boston and I look outside and it looks like a night rain? You're not allowed to say night rain in Florida. That's a secret.
Well, so again, you know, he has to be careful because again, any legal context like that would say that there are cases where there's presumed permission and cases where there's presumed lack of permission, and the issue is where we draw the line. Right? It might be that, you know, that I've asked you 16 times before if I repeat the weather statement, right? It might be that there are so many other people I have access to that there's presumed permission. I wouldn't get hung up on that.
Would you really have to ask permission every single time you see something
coming up? Again, we would create an implicit permission.
Well, then what's the point?
Right, as I'm saying, so, but the issue is where we draw the line, right? You know, now we have to figure out what kind of, right, the real question is going to be about what kind of information can you not presume implicit, right? Do you need explicit permission as opposed to implicit permission? Right, it's a new kind of speech code. Yeah,
right.
Where? Somebody did. Let me have mandu, right? That person, not a doubt mandu. Hafu mandu is just body amuni. Okay. Right, so he says, right, so here's the right, so that's I still a silu name. Mara Dama Rabbanasi, Bainer Rabbanasi, Bainer Rabbanasi, Rabba. Established tradition. Minayim Omer, Devil of Kabir, Shuzal Yumar. Ash Yumar Lo, Lake and War. Shemar Vedera Shalom Moshe Lake and War. Okay, the barrel today shows like more. The Emir Shemal Moshe and more like Kohanim. We like that one for contemporary grammarians. We don't think like more means to say. We think like more, right, that's all my focus is showing, whether really more means to say or more means to open quote. The contemporary chat position is that like more means open quote, and so it wouldn't be good proof at all. So we're happy to have it more like Kohanim. You can learn that, you know, my focus largely depends on the Pesach in the part of the that begins with the word Lamor. Alright, so what does that mean? Okay. Alright, so Baram, in the case of the however, Torah, you will make the Amid of Milsa Kame Betwasa, Mahu Lameza Lamenda Lamare, Olachrine. Okay, so the givens are that you can't say anything false, and you can't repeat anything true without, right, without permission. Okay, we need to ask the question of whether the permission has to be explicit or implicit for now. Some kinds will require explicit permission. But what happens if Hesha the Amma Manilta counted based lasa? So who says to whom, right? That our result there is. Who says what, right? If the true information that you were told by somebody was told to you when there were two other people present as well. All right, does everybody agree with how we're reading it? Okay, so what happens if you were told something in front of three people? Mahu lameza lamein rale lamore, ola frine. Right, so is it permitted then to say it either, now all of a sudden we're talking about other people. Is it permitted either to say this information which now is apparently about somebody to the person whom it was about, or to anybody else? Okay, so we have the two positions, right? Either this is the kind of information about which you don't have implicit permission, and therefore, say in front of three people does not constitute implicit permission, or maybe say in front of three people constitutes implicit permission. Okay, or alternatively, saying in front of three people creates a situation where you don't require permission because what would be the person's interest in confidentiality anyway? Yes, that's the problem with that position. Or it might be that if you say in front of three people, you lose your right to confidentiality.
Unless you say not to say.
Although that does not show up in the children. Right, we know that for the Sugya of Macha. The Shulah doesn't raise that question. The Shulah just says, right, this information, when I created a statement, you cannot repeat information that someone told you without permission, does that extend, like, does the requirement for permission extend to where you said it in front of three people or not? Because three people in the new category are Hetzia.
Maybe even if you deny permission because you were willing to say it in public, you
you're done.
He says, Timan Damar Leha Mor Damar. So, right, so more likely it constitutes, the easiest way to show this is that constitutes permission. Okay? Oh, well, there it is. Okay? So he says, well, I can demonstrate to you, right, that, right, why the Sashman Damar Bar Rabba Barakuna, Komil to the Amra Bate, Beit Wata, and the Mishan Lishna Bishna, he also the Amra Leva Mare, to have the Leki Sarhatya. Okay, so what does Rabba Barakuna mean? And what does Rabba Barakuna prove? Now, that actually asks the question the other way around. What does Rabba Barakuna prove? And then, right, how, right, what does Rabba Barakuna mean such that he can be used to prove that? Okay, Daryl, what do you want to say?
I think that actually the significance of in his question, he says the Mario and his conclusion,
he wants to remark. Yes, that's a good question, whether Achrini is called a Homer. If you know the answer by Mario, then you know the right and the there, then Kalba Homer you can say to somebody else. Or is just maybe you never got to that question? Well, it might be a claim of the presumption of Yitzhak and the only proof he has it, so that's a weak way of doing it. A lot of it depends on what you think the Shilkos is. We should mention that now. There are two positions, fundamentally positions about the Shilkos. One position about the Shilkos is that the Shilkos should be read as a parish on our Gemara. Right, if somebody is looking at our Gemara and, you know, and explaining it in public, and then you have to read this as, how does he understand the Sugim of Basra? And the other position, which is my authority, is that the Shilkos actually is sort of is a remnant of a pre-Talmudic form. So you can't actually ask, how does the Shilkos read the Sugim? It's more interesting, you ask the question, how did the Sugim develop out of something like the Shilkos? And in that case, the Shilkos is not responsive to the Sugim. Right, that works on the assumption of the Talmud is still oral in the Yonic period and not the means of public learning. You can take your parents, because that's what Dr. Neil Danzig argued to me. I have no direct knowledge of the issue. Either way, he has an explanation about the Baruch Hu. Let's start with, right? So let's start with, in those contexts of the Shilkos, what does he prove? Right, the Shilkos demonstrates that you are allowed to repeat things said to you when there are two other orders. Okay, because of Rav Arjuna, good. Okay, so actually, it's a three-step process. Actually, we know the end point is going to be that if Rav Arjuna is correct, then it's much to repeat three things. What does Rav Arjuna actually say?
That
he said it's not Mishnah Bisha to do what? Yes, he does.
No.
Not Mishnah Bisha, right, to do what? Who is it not Mishnah Bisha for, according to Rabbi Arjuna? To do what? Yes, Rabbi. It's not Mishnah Bisha for one of those three people to go back and say it to the, right, and say it to the person who was set it down. Right? He ugled up. Right? In the Mishnah Bisha, he ugled on Rabbi Arjuna. I'm just explaining Rav Barabuna, right? So in Rav Barabuna, the logic was as follows. Rav Barabuna says that if somebody says something about someone else in front of three people, it is permitted for one of those three people to go and tell the person it was said about. Now we could just set this up as a one-to-one correspondence. Okay? That was the question. The question he asked was, if somebody says something about somebody else in front of three people, then those three people can treat that as implicit permission to tell the person. Right? As look, Rabbi Arjuna said, it's not lashon hara to say something, right, if something was said in front of three people, to go and repeat it to the person who has said it that. Why? Rabbi Arjuna says, the reason for this is because it is perhaps, yeah? And there could be parsimonious again and assume that Parhesia is like Leicha more, right? It's all one again. So what Rav Huna says basically is that there's no Lashon Hara anytime it would get back to the other person. Anytime you have no objection to getting back to the other person. But it's not Lashon Hara for you. It's not Lashon Hara to repeat it. Maybe. He doesn't take that position about it, right? During the fight, there's nothing about whether it's much of a safe thing in front of three people. It's just that if Lashon Hara was said in front of three people, then you're allowed to go back and tell the person that Lashon Hara was said about you by someone.
Yeah. It's forgotten. All of these shelters are directly talking about confidentiality. There's no particular reason, just that what was said originally was intrinsically negative. I mean, there's no reason to assume that there would have been a problem in having said it over, especially it could just be the first person's personal secret, or what would have been a secret had it not been publicly. There's no reason to assume there's any answer for him to say there was a secret. He doesn't tell
it. It could be I'm making a birthday party for somebody. Okay, what's the evidence against that?
Yeah? I mean the whole first section where he's talking about the Ramarara sort of uses the phrase Lishavisha, and there's no evidence that Ramachai thinks Lishavisha would mean anything other than Lishavisha.
Okay, great. And the challenge here is that the doctors are willing to claim that the term Lishavara, the term Lishavisha, means breach of confidence. Right? That's where, are we willing to make that move or not? And is that an Archimedean point to us? That Lishna Bisha must be something bad about somebody or not? Yes, sir.
If
So there again, we get to the problem of the lack of heroism. Right, the Shilta, in this section, the Shilta never discusses the question of whether it's permitted to say true things about people, period. At least from the Shilta, right, you might argue, right, and the language of the Shilta is that everything we said about Lashon Hara previously, that was all about Sheker. But a structurally following in the Shilta is that all the agadic hyperbole about Lashon Hara, that's about Sheker. That's an interesting question. Maybe you have an obligation to check. And the Gemara needs to believe that's true. Right. So to Gemara, right, so it's also to believe that it's true. Right, that's the answer, but it's mostly to be cautious. Perfectly sensible. Right, but the speaker, it could be the shelter of belief, but what we see is that it is, right, that there is no issue of, right, there's no issue of saying bad things about people, except possibly patient finances. And you might be constructed just like it's us to say something that somebody else told you about somebody else, it's us to tell something about that person that they themselves tried to keep secret. Right, that would be, it's not the negativity as such, right, it's the breach of privacy.
It might also be what you can say something negative about someone which they didn't tell you, but what you observed.
Yeah.
You could
But only if you observe, but maybe only if you observe it with two other people.
No, he doesn't say that. He says you can't repeat something you heard from somebody else.
That's right. So what I'm saying is, he thinks that
if I see someone steal, if I see someone do something or act in a negative way,
yeah,
I might be able to say that.
I might. That's not that. There's no way of telling negative things the moment they're true. I'm not saying there might be a sort of telling anything, just like it's us to say something. If somebody said something to me, right? So the fact they said something is private. Maybe your wife generally is private.
Still
doesn't say that for sure, right? That would be a construction. Mm-hmm. Right? That would be a construction that I would generate. I can't turn the shoulders to that.
Right, but the key thing for me is that as far as the first thing you see in the Shulchan, the Shulchan has no commitment, so far as we can tell, to believing that saying negative things about people is wrong. He does have a commitment to confidence, and John at least is willing to believe that he's even willing to say that when Rav Barzal uses the term Lishnavisha, that's what he means. Right? Lishnavisha means bad speech, not negative speech. And bad speech is speech that reveals something which you had no right to reveal. As opposed to something, bad speech is speech which damages somebody else. Okay. So we have, the Shulchan that differs from Tosfos. He changes the person who gets the heter from the original speaker, to the next person. Now you might make a clever argument to suggest, I like this argument, that in fact it must have been listed for the first person, because otherwise of course the Lashon Hara is repeated, because you're saying that someone still told Lashon Hara. Right, so you accept that argument, right? But it's always Lashon Hara to say this to say to somebody else that somebody else, right? Somebody else told you this, if it was listed for them, therefore it must have been listed for the first person also. So maybe it was looking for the first, the children of the Vatican, but it was looking for the first person even if he just told you 101. Because if they're repeating it, it's not Lashon Hara that he said Lashon Hara, if they're repeating it that he didn't want you to.
Who's the next
told you, told his name?
And maybe he was clearer
in order to be trusted. Well, the issue is going back to his owner. So what would be like? What's the chiddush, right? If I tell you the thing that Ben D are getting divorced, and I run and I tell C you're getting divorced, mm-hmm. Right? And like, what can I say? The only thing I could usefully tell C and D is the tones of the
thing. No. What if you hear D is going to divorce?
Yeah.
And you go tell C that you're less than them having a difference.
Ah, okay. So then that's an intermediate case.
And the person talking about it, the other person talking about it is still there. That he's above that or also, maybe he even has the right to
talk about it. But he doesn't have the right to talk about it. So that's an example of Nari, because it's something that's going to happen to them. Yeah, that's the issue. That introduces two more in, right? One is going to mention one of them.
I have three
bottles. Yeah. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And
when
I was doing
this stuff,
I didn't have any particular reason to understand that the case is always that you're going back in time, who told you the information, as opposed to really kept talking about the substance. Well, even within half the question itself. As opposed to kind of the other reason, the hard done is sort of like what we would closely call the feeling. You know, but not, I wasn't convinced the shelter was talking about that.
Oh, you think it's the information that said, okay, I have to say I should leave it agnostic. We don't know that. Right, we know that the shelter is that it's mutter, that the heter applies to the secondary person, and it's easier to claim with mutter if the original person was a hit stuff that the individual person didn't require three. Now, again, so we just claiming that there's something else, he just doesn't use the term Lishnavisha, which is absurd about saying true things or negative about people. Yeah?
Well, you could come to a case where there really are only two parties, and if what other thing is working, if the person is telling the speaker is the husband, then there's clearly the speaker and there's Mare with the woman, and then you can deal with this to a case where you don't have to say that the husband said it, you just have to convey the information, and even without saying the husband said all the information, it's clear that the issue at hand is pure confidentiality, has nothing to do with saying who the speaker was, and that's it.
Okay.
I am going to do A, right? Then the only two people involved are the speaker and
yeah, so my intuition is that somehow, the information about what the decisions people are going to make is similar to so-and-so told me in a way that sound information wouldn't be, but I don't have that formulated yet, so I have to lose the agnostic now. That's where I would go. Yeah. So we get all
you
with us.
The case of the 2-4 is you tell me I'm going to kill so-and-so, then I go and tell so-and-so. If so-and-so ignores me, then it's their fault to die. There's certainly a mar in that case.
Are you right? Well, are you running and saying so-and-so is going to kill you, or are you running and saying so-and-so said he's going to kill you? Well, that's the part that's where we go back to. Maybe.
When you start to say things, you are saying that, you know, maybe in that case there's no difference between saying, so, you know, Tony's going to kill you or Tony didn't going to kill you. But still, the issue there is purely breach of confidence and knowledge. Right? There, the import of the statement, Tony said he's going to kill you, is that Tony's going to kill you. Not, right? It's not, there clearly is not the fact that he said something about you, but the information was that, you know,
here's the common denominator. All the cases you're constructing is I'm telling the Mare information about the person who told it to me.
Right, as long as you construct that case as a reason.
Right, something that's like saying he told it to me. Right, those are all cases that you're conveying, which there are all those cases where there are two Mares, and I'm telling one of the Mare about the other. The intermediate case is what happens is I tell you information that has nothing to do with me. Right? If I tell you that so-and-so is divorcing his wife, and I run and I tell that person, and I tell the wife that entirely independent party is divorcing you, so I would suggest that maybe if the only issue with that, as such, is that probably the person who told you was told by that person, and you're repeating the feature.
I didn't get that.
Okay, that's what I'm suggesting. The breach of confidentiality is not about the information, it's about, right, it's about the speaker, but I can't prove it.
Which is why I was surprised that you put in Neary was in bracket, because then Neary is adding the case, and you showed you put the bracket on that.
Yes, Neary, we'll get there in a minute.
It always has to be, the evidence that it's always about that the guy said it, is that the whole issue, the issue is solely breach of confidentiality. That's the only thing, what about I hear than I hear, right? That's the issue, breach of confidentiality, right? So when I run and tell someone that fact, right, it doesn't matter, like, the effect, it doesn't matter the effect that's going to have, right? What matters is that I breached confidentiality. I said what that guy said.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the evidence for what you
did. Yeah. So I think, I would like to extend this to privacy, not just confidentiality. I would like to, but I don't have any proof of that. But that was like a totally radically different, if you think that this benefit or type doesn't have what we usually call as an error, it's a totally different, you know, it's a totally different thing. Right? So, then, right, so you have to reconceptualize all of what's an error. And nothing to do with harming other people. And that's where privacy becomes important, as I should say, telegraph, right? So, that's Jeffrey Rosen's, just doing Jeffrey Rosen's piece of the American. And that's really where I got the idea from. That many things which are currently constructed as sorts, but if you damage somebody, should instead deconstruct the recency of the pictures of privacy. And you can get to many of the same places that way, but it makes a lot more sense. You'll hear him make the argument. But I want to suggest that the Shiltos is, right, the Shiltos is creating this, is creating that move. Now, textually, where he differs from Shiltos is that he thinks that Rabbi Bar Sina is talking about the repeater and not the original speaker, which may mean that he doesn't care about the Gemara Rafa, he doesn't have the Gemara Rafa the same way Tosfos does. He certainly doesn't have the three languages of the Gemara, so you don't have to know how he explains that. And he invents a new term, which is Parhesia. But for him, Parhesia solves not that the person will eventually know, but Parhesia means that you can create it, that it's implicit permission to repeat it, and that may just be because is the guy really wanting to keep a secret while we sell three people? That leaves open the whole question of whether there is a category of things that I want a bunch of people to know, not everybody. Right? It sounds like this is just saying that in an ordinary circumstance, there's only two kinds of circular information.
things are known by some people, and things are known by everybody. Things are known by very limited set, things are known by everybody. But there is an intermediate position which goes back to the Gibbon originally, which is, according to the Shulta, what happens if I tell it to three people consecutively? Right? So if the issue is, do I expect the other person to find out, it might be that, well, as long as three people know about it, right, there are no secrets. If the issue is that it's public, right, stating something to a group is not the same thing as stating something in private. So stating something to a whole series of people privately is still stating privately, and that doesn't work at all. Okay. Here are a bunch of questions. I think that's plausible also. I think that's probably also a distinction that does those. Right, probably doesn't matter. So I don't know. These are issues which Rishonim don't commit themselves on. Right? We could just say we know from the right, at the end of Tosfos and Rishonim, what we know is that it's possible that Rav Baruch Huna is talking about negative statements about people, and it's possibly just talking about confidential information, and that it's possibly talking about the original speaker, and it's possibly talking about the repeater. And that's all we know. So also, it's possible the ground is that it gets back to the original person, and it's possible the ground is that the person who said it doesn't care if you repeat it. Okay. And I have to decide, right, what kind of evidence do you need in order to cite a regional evidence as proof of something. And on the exegetical issues, there seems to be no Arthurian point in common between Tosfos and Tosfos and Rebbechai. There's no line anywhere that they feel they have to be the same way. There's no starting premise that they share. And they're figured at no point of contact other than the language, the Afetwas. No other line of phrase. The word Milta doesn't mean the same thing, the word Mitzamer doesn't mean the same thing, right? The word Lishadisha doesn't mean the same thing. And the only words that mean the same thing about Pesach, so even that, as you pointed out, one of them may be defective, one of them is actually right. It's possible there's absolutely genuinely no point of contact between the Rav Baruch Huna's statement and the two interpretations. Okay. So now, Yuri
knows how to do bris, and he just loves playing with bris. You can find Yuri on both sides, almost every important figure, and almost every figure. He's very careful about it. I think Yuri is written often to avoid, in law generally, right? You always have to decide whether you want to write, in a way that creates maximal commitment to people, and they're not necessary, because you want to get your theory of the law across. Or you want to be cautious and say, I want to leave myself as much flexibility as possible in the future. Right? So the issue is, the more flexibility you leave yourself, the more flexibility you leave other people. The less flexibility you leave other people, the less flexibility you leave yourself. So some people will try to write the decision as broadly as possible because they're sure what the rule is and they want everybody else to have to follow it. And some people will write decisions as narrowly as possible because they don't want to, they want their, what they like is the ability to decide case by case. Right, so the Mihiri, I think, in his Paris and Shah, is very careful about making commitments. Right, and he makes the minimal number of commitments necessary. He only makes the commitments he wants to make. And you have to be very careful because, you very often have lines which you say, oh, that proves this. And you look at the next line and he says the opposite. So you're trying very hard to avoid committing yourself. So what does he say here? He says that our conclusion that Masal requires two and not three, it only requires three,
is a conclusion that Makah is different than Lashon Hara, okay, meaning that everybody agrees with Rav Baruch Hu enough that you require three by Lashon Hara, but we're adopting, right, and presumably we're adopting the position that Makah Shalo B'Fanav is Makah, so here he explains the third language, means the third position in the Gemara. So the third position in the Gemara, which is that everybody agrees with Rav Baruch Hu enough, but nonetheless, there is a position which says that Makah requires two and not three. And so what, right? So the reason, right, the reason for that is, right, so let's play it up. So what is it, Lashon Hara, what is it about Lashon Hara that becomes Lashon Hara in front of three? No, what is it, right? Who's the speaker? Saying what? Right, so it's like the Shulter, right? So it's like the Shulter, Jonathan correctly points out, maybe extending in detail, it's not in the Shulter, it's the repeater, going back to the subject, but here he says explicitly it's repeated going back to the subject and saying that so and so said this. Okay? That's now Lashon Hara. Why? Because since the first person said it in front of three, it's as if he already said it to the whole world. Okay, and then here he manages to very nicely flesh there, and what does that mean? He said the whole world, therefore the other person, therefore the other person already knows, therefore it's not Lashon Hara to say it because the guy's gonna find out anyway. About, right, the other person spoke Lashon Hara about him, all of this theory just leaves happily up in the air. Right, the line that most interesting over here, if John just plays that one thing, one thing that Mary adds, maybe is that it's Tony Amad Devar Zeleka, what's the other line that Mary adds that's not found explicitly in the row? The Chateau. Right, what does the word the Chateau mean? Yeah.
I think it means that there's only a certain period of time for which this works. It's well known for, you know, the first time the Bible church is dead, but if you were to try and repeat it again 20 years from now, it's not considered the first time anymore.
Okay. That could be. That could be that it's not right. In terms of the negative, or it could be that even though three people add something which is that two people refresh already spreads, but three people spreads immediately. And the reverse, right? So when Ramos argued that even three people only create temporary publicity, and I want to suggest the opposite is that three people create immediate publicity. We don't need three people for eventual publicity. If I have to say what Amir is saying, Amir is saying is that the Makhlokas between two and three is whether Makhlokas requires immediate or eventual publicity. But what we then tell people, Lashon Hara is not based on the same principles. Lashon Hara is Kini Shon Hara L'Chol Olam. Lashon Hara is based on something else entirely. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Shato implies that when you say in front of three people, Allah has said it, but wasn't it said? There's
a change
in what he said just by the fact he said it in front of three people.
Yes. Right, so Lashon Hara is certainly important. Right, the ground for Lashon Hara not apparently the same as Makah. Lashon Hara accomplishes Pirsuma, three people accomplishes Pirsuma Shatel, right, we don't know why they're concentrated on Makah, and Lashon Hara would accomplish it with universal knowledge. Okay, I cannot stunt by Makah and saying that really the din is yet to have Makah upon us. But since three people is Kinesha Marlok all along, so Mela has to literally send it to him.
That's
the legend. People keep pointing other people at me. Yeah.
Then why does he make the analogy of Lashon Hara at all?
The guard is.
So what?
So what he says is the final maskana of the sugya. He says so the maskana of the sugya is that even if you agree with Rav Baruch Hu, you can still require two. So there is no analogy of Lashon Hara.
Yeah. But then he says the question I'm making is, or I'm asking is that, so he says that, he holds like he can still hold like Rav Baruch Hu, right? Before someone shot, by three, gets out the shot, so whatever that means,
right?
The Kamosha, or Radio Lashon Hara, and like Lashon Hara, which he says,
Right.
So it sounds like whatever's happening by three with Makah is the same thing as happening with Lashon Hara, not different.
The mechanic, the mechanism is the same, the answer is not the same.
Okay.
Right? A good exercise, by the way, people, I think, intuitively appreciate the extent to which Dustin Erie conceives of himself as a Balakosa. So if you think about the Erie structurally, in terms of Dustin, you'll see it's doing the exact same thing. Right? The amount of the whole three requires doing Yosef and Lashon Hara. And he's actually adding nothing to that simulation. He says it requires him the first time of Shato. I wrote about the Erie on Christianity. I think that major misunderstandings of Erie on Christianity have occurred because people have read the Erie as if he were a new commentary and not reading as somebody who fundamentally paraphrases Tosfos. But I think that the best way to read the Erie often is to look at Tosfos and you'll see how the Erie tracks line by line. And if you look at Christianity specifically, I think there have been a number of places where major sections have been badly misread because people didn't have the Tosfos in front of them when they read the Erie. First question is, right, how do these paragraphs? So is that his definition of Lashon Hara? Let's say, Pash is probably, right? The definition of Lashon Hara is, Lashon Hara is, okay, so he's about as antipodal from the Chilthos as you can imagine. I did.
I think it doesn't matter
whether
it's
the same
or
the rule 4, it's the Lobotan, what will I get back in the rule 6? Yeah, can't work around it. If it was Ulis up there, it would be fine. But it's Dihamas up there. I could say that Tranquil agrees with me, but I don't remember. I don't think he agrees with that. Okay. So we have a new definition of Lashon Hara, which appears to be speech that is damaging. Not a speech that is negative. Damaging. There's another definition in line. There's another definition earlier, and you have to figure out how those two connect. I think that's an excellent question. I have a problem reading it, right? Because it should be. I have to have the right should go in initially to the English because they rather than the model. It's an alpha show the final. It should be asked on this apparel scenario. It's not clear why he needs to put in the second definition. I agree. I think that's a puzzling thing, right? Thank you for pointing out that there is a line earlier which gives a different definition. So,
Isn't that
also defined
the term that he's using here for Lashon
Hara? And why does he have to add these
spaces? What is Lashon Hara, but they're also Yitzurim.
But he says in the last line, "Already you will shun
hara."
Right. So I confess to being very deeply puzzled by what Ram offers as a definition. Having said that, he says, "In every drama, it will be shnei shlosha, v'ra nishna davar v'noda." Okay. Now, is that a factual statement or a legal statement? Does that tell you anything of mutter yet? No. By itself? And therefore it's mutter? No. Probably not. Cross background. Therefore, that is vision paper. Right? So the way to tell what you want to read it is, translated as, and if these the things previously mentioned were said in front of three people, then it's already known. And therefore, if one of them, right, if one of those three said it said it at some point to someone unknown, that is not Lashon Hara. So long as he doesn't have the intent to spread the word and publicize it further. This is like a wildly puzzling halacha to me. First of all, like, why would you say it? It's not going to be kind of, what are you doing? If you're not informing anybody, so what does it mean to tell something? You're talking about it. So you have to not into. So even though this is universally known, now is it? You shouldn't have kavana, and it's only a function of your kavana. So if you tell it to somebody with kavana, and it turns out that they already knew, is that a violation of b'shogeg?
Yeah.
Or a violation of b'nezid, because you told something with intent, and it's the intent that defines it. Is he claiming that Lashon Hara is defined truly by intent? Maybe. Okay, maybe. And it's mutter to tell somebody else, we don't know if it's mutter to tell the original person, right? He's the first person who says explicitly that the three people can tell anybody. Right? The Shulchan raised the question but never answered it. The Amiri is explicit that he's only going back to the original person. But the Rambam explicitly says that it's mutter to tell anybody else, but we don't know whether that means as opposed to the person or as opposed to the original person. Okay. What's the mechanism? Right, the mechanism is Karnishma Hadavar Vinoda, to whom? We don't know. And we don't know whether the original, the pashtus is that the original person it was author. So then we have to ask, why is it Lashon Hara to repeat it? So that maybe it's repeating the information and not repeating that someone said it. Right? So he's not talking about repeating Dover Zell F, he's talking about just repeating the information as such. Okay. What the ground for the Hesed Mishnei Shlosha is what? What's the ground of the Hesed? Why is it Mutter? Karnish Madavar, and therefore? So you already know. So the issue of Lashon Hara from the Rambam, as you're saying, what is the issue? The issue is? The issue is to convey negative information to somebody, or at least to intend to convey negative information to somebody who didn't already know it. Right? It's not the breach of privacy. It's actually spreading information. Here's the tension, right? So two notions of ethics, right? Some depend on it. Depends whether you're doing something well, the other depends whether it's bad for you. If you think of Lashon Hara as virtue-oriented, right? So it's bad for people to say negative things about people. You already know it. And it's just bad for you. You go, right, if I spend my time, we all know how horrible so-and-so is. Okay, very, 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 very commonly, right? We're in office, we all know that so-and-so is, right, that's just not me. Okay? Right, so the question is, can we sit around retelling among ourselves all the stories of the horrible things that Sitzafi did to us? So then Rambam was all that is another thing. That's hard to figure. But what's worse is if you say, the reason the Rambam only cares, the Rambam doesn't care about that is because the Rambam conceives of Lashon Hara as a source. He conceives it as a form of the deacon, no damage is being done. There's no information is being spread that wasn't previously done. So A, it's not clear that damage isn't being done just by having people discuss negatively, even if no new information is, right, forget spreading the word. Right, it just entrenches people's negative perception the more you talk about it. Right. Secondly, if that were the case, why does he care about my kavanah? Okay, well, there we have a question in the middle.
That you read as the inferred definition of what you're not supposed to say. But what if it's not the definition of what you're not supposed to say, but it's the reason you're not supposed to say it? Right. In which case, if you don't increase the chance of it being hurt or killed or frightened, then you didn't do anything wrong.
That's it. That's it's not a virtuosic at all. It's purely a fact ethic. Do you do anything wrong or not? And the problem then is, why does he make it depend on Kabbalah, and he has to then reframe and say, right, so it doesn't really depend on Kabbalah. We're just saying that you can, right, it doesn't really mean revolutionary is coming. What it means is, right, revolutionary is coming, right, but it's just that you should be careful about that. Revolutionary is coming, it sounds like, right, that it is a virtuous thing, and more than that. Where does this sound from? So Rav Nachman seems to frame this as a virtue issue.
And then also, if you look at the halacha from Halacha Bet, that also is a virtue.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to believe this. I'm just left like it's very puzzling. Because why should it? To me, and it's subjectively, to me, often the worst lashon hara is the repetition. Right. It's the constant reminder. It's a constant reminder of things that people did wrong. Right? What's trying to be crazy is not so much finding out new things. It's when people, every time somebody's name is mentioned, they have to remember, right, and that's the person who. Subjectively, intuitively, if that's what the Rama means, It fails to get to the psychological root of the problem. But that's not a textual claim. That's a psychological claim. You can all say, no, I don't see the issue. Or you could try and do, which I would encourage, try and find some way to claim, right, when the Rama says, you can also add in the category, right, something like that, right, where it's not restricted to extension of the information. It's increasing the circulation of the information, and so we have to plan. There are situations that don't do that, and situations do that, and the challenge will be trying to find something, right, which we would still admit is mutter. Yes.
This is a long time. So I'll hit there. I wouldn't be able to discuss it, but I think that if he doesn't, then that might be why he frames it this way, so that the people who already know about it, because they have to, can at least discuss the issue and deal with it.
Because he doesn't have a
solo hit
at all.
Not here, but I don't know that.
Hard to imagine he doesn't have a solo hit there. But you can try that. Hard to. I think he does. You guys read the rest of the paragraph.
Sure.
Yeah, that's key. I don't think you can pull that off.
Yeah.
I just wanted to put that out there. There are reams of information trying to get them out. But that to me is a central issue in the Rambam. And then in the Gershom, right, what in one word, what's in the Gershom that makes it is interpretationally? What did the Gershom do in terms of understanding it's looking at no one did previously? Yeah? He says the Machana is watching Torah. Very good. Alright, so we'll get to tomorrow. Right? The Gershom changes the whole term of the sugya, but instead of creating an analogy between Machana and Lashon Hara, he says the Machana is watching Torah. And that opens up whole new ways, right? Whole new ways in the same way that the Tosfos and the Shultos understand all about what a different ways in ways that have no connection to each other. So Rabbi Gershom and everyone previously learned whole different ways of understanding the sugya, because the logic is going to be completely altered. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to do something else entirely. I think that's a plan. Maybe what we should do tomorrow is spend some time doing this. I'll work it out. But if you're done, if you're confident that you've done the rest of the curves in a fashion can enter the shares today, then you can go download the next unit, or you can figure out whenever we meet next. I think if you take tomorrow finishing the unit, but Monday morning you should be going on to the next one. That would be my assumption. Okay. Have an easy and meaningful class, everybody. Thank you for your attention under these, you know, very trying physical circumstances.